generate an altruistic motivation for the meditation? So training in the perfection of wisdom. The first five of the six perfections cannot lead to enlightenment, no matter how much they are developed. None of them are the direct antidote to self-grasping, the root of samsara. Self-grasping or true grasping is a mind that grasps at true existence. Things appear to us to truly exist. They appear to exist independently of causes and conditions from their own side, which is a wrong consciousness. That wrong consciousness of true grasping needs a particular wisdom as the direct antidote. A wisdom that realizes the emptiness of true existence. To realize emptiness, we need a considerable accumulation of merit. How do we accumulate that? It's by the other perfections. A bodhisattva who is very skilled in the perfections meditates on the accumulation of merit and the accumulation of wisdom alternately. They need to do this in the same way as a bird when they need to fly to a distant destination, needs two wings to be able to get there. The bodhisattva needs both method and wisdom to be able to reach the goal of full awakening. When a bodhisattva is skilled, they combine method together with wisdom in their practice of the six perfections by conceiving the emptiness of the three spheres. The three spheres refer to the object, the deed, and the doer. So taking the perfection of generosity as an example, the object would be the object that one is offering. The deed would be the generosity, the mind of generosity. And the doer is the practitioner, the person who's engaging in generosity. In regard to ethical restraint, the object is the perhaps the critical mind that one is restraining from. That critical thought appears to truly exist, so it's remembered to be empty. In the second, the deed, the mind of ethical restraint itself appears to truly exist, and one remembers it does not. And third, the practitioner themselves, oneself who is practicing ethical restraint, also appears to truly exist, and it's realized one does not. The same with joyous effort. The object would be delighting in the virtue of restraint, for example. It does not inherently exist. The subjective mind of joyous effort does not inherently exist. Oneself, the practitioner of joyous effort, does not inherently exist. This is the practice of a skilled bodhisattva. For us, we need initially to concentrate on accumulating the merit, practicing those perfections as well as loving kindness and compassion, bodhicitta, cherishing others. Then our reflection on reality will be successful. We may think to go straight to developing concentration and calm abiding, to be able to focus on the path of all the trainings. But there are no examples of bodhisattvas who train like that. And Guru Shakyamuni Buddha himself did not train like that or teach that as a method. He taught to start by accumulating merit. And then much later to develop calm abiding. Because ethical restraint is the foundation for developing calm abiding. The next practice 31, is analyzing and abandoning your own faults. The starting point for our own Mahayana aims is to identify our own faults. If we don't do that, then There's no way to benefit others. We need to examine our own state of mind, to really examine our own motivation. Are we influenced by self-cherishing or cherishing others? It may not be obvious to us, but if we're influenced by afflictive states of mind, it will be obvious to others. Bodhisattvas are always aware of their own mental processes. They guard their minds carefully against pride or arrogance, self-cherishing or true grasping. We need to do the same. If our generosity, for example, is stained by afflictions, it's very weak virtue. And if we give with pride or anger, even though someone may appreciate our generosity, they won't feel comfortable. Our pride will look down on them. And they will feel that. So we need to take great care of our own mind. And also watch our speech and our physical actions. The next practice is abandoning criticism of bodhisattvas. We can't tell who is a bodhisattva or not, but we need to watch our mind to ensure that there are no afflictions controlling our actions. It is through afflictions that we criticize others. We need to be very careful. If we criticize others, that person may be a bodhisattva. Buddhas hold each and every being in their heart. We need to avoid any criticism. It's wise to not attach any importance to the flaws of others. Bodhisattvas don't criticize because of their trainings in loving kindness and compassion, even though they notice the actions of others. It increases their compassion. And it induces a action in the bodhisattva to benefit that being, not to criticize them. criticizing others is not ethical restraint. Pride makes us wonder why others don't do what we do or what we want. But it's not skillful. We can't judge another person's capacity or their motivation. The next practice is to avoid attachment to households of benefactors. When we're with a companion, there's a danger that we compete with them. By competing, harmony is lost. The afflictive minds are longing to be seen as best if we go to a benefactor's house. We may persuade the benefactor to sponsor us instead of the person with us, who may be a bodhisattva. We may do pujas and practices, but we're hoping for a reward, for recognition. We need to guard against jealousy when our benefactor supports others. That person may be impoverished and in real need, so we need to rejoice. Or there may be a bodhisattva more capable, more able. So again, it's something to rejoice in. Bodhisattvas don't need material things. What they need is merit. If we're really familiar with that, we can guard our mind well against such expectations, such need for reward. And we also need to refrain from harsh speech, which is the next practice of a bodhisattva. The goal of a bodhisattva is to please others and help them. If we engage in crude speech or harsh speech, it hurts others. It's not a mind of restraint. Our harmful words can cause negative minds to arise in those we engage with. Primary restraint is restraining our self-cherishing. So we should never be rude to others, but hold them close. If we don't practice well, then pride and jealousy can deceptively sneak in and control us. So it's very important to guard against subtle self-cherishing and these negative, afflictive minds. And we move on to practice 35. The manner in which to abandon afflictions. A tree with many thorns, when it was just a sprout, could have been easily removed. If we let it grow into a large tree, then it's very difficult to remove. Our afflictions are just like this. Afflictions can be countered before they become very habitual and strong. We need to remember that afflictions are never justified. They are not our friends. They don't help us attain what we want. If they're allowed to become dominant, it's extremely difficult to eliminate them. Another illustration that's relevant at the moment is that if we recognize that we have symptoms of the coronavirus but do nothing about it, then that can be very dangerous for others that we interact with and also for ourselves. We can get more sick and then not be able to get the help we need. If we notice the symptoms and get tested straight away, then it's much better for others to not be contaminated, and gives a greater chance for us to also survive. So in terms of recognizing and taking the appropriate steps to counter afflictions, we need to follow the example of the Bodhisattva warrior. Bodhisattva warrior uses mindfulness and introspection. Mindfulness remembers the danger of afflictions, remembers that an antidote is needed and which particular antidote will be appropriate. Introspection is ever vigilant for afflictions. So we need to become skilled in recognizing even subtle afflictions and taking steps to counter them. We need to do this when we're alone, when we're with others, when we're busy or not. As beginners, the practice is very difficult. But with skill, it becomes easy. So first we meditate, remembering particular objects that might give rise to our attachment, for example. What is it that we see or hear or taste that might be a problem today? We need to understand that attachment exaggerates that object, the qualities or the benefits of that object. And we need to remember that that object will not last. For instance, we may feel really attracted to beautiful flowers in a lovely garden. So if we've meditated in this way, when we go to observe the beautiful flowers in a garden, we remember the danger of attachment, that the beauty is exaggerated and it's impermanent. So we're on guard and the attachment is weakened. And we can think of the antidote and meditate on the antidote to increase it. The contented mind. So with introspection we see that attachment has arisen. And with mindfulness we remember the antidote and practice the antidote. These three steps are very important. So this brings us to the significance of mindfulness and introspection. We need to be aware of our behavior. By utilizing introspection, whatever I'm engaged in and whomever I'm with. Use introspection to examine the mind and see whether attachment or jealousy or anger or resentment is dominating our mind. When we see some afflictive mind, then we utilize mindfulness to remind ourselves of the danger of that affliction, to remember it's never justified, and that now is the time to apply the antidote. So remembering the particular antidote that is relevant, and then apply it. Remember the aspiring bodhisattva has the responsibility to train and develop oneself. How can we do that if we don't understand what afflictions are? Not only in a coarse way, but the subtle afflictions. We need to know the various afflictions and the danger they pose. And we need to know the antidotes, the variety of virtuous minds, and which specific one is an antidote for which specific affliction. By understanding them well, understanding their subtleties and how to apply them, then we can guard our mind. We're aspiring to become a bodhisattva. So we need to understand the great danger of the self-cherishing mind and the value of cherishing others. That is paramount. All the afflictions are supported by the self-cherishing mind, and they're weakened by cherishing others. So meditate frequently and become familiar and trained in introspection and mindfulness. With daily meditation, and then throughout our activities during the day. And then the final practice of the bodhisattva is dedication of virtue to enlightenment. So all the virtue gained through making efforts in this way, for the sake of eliminating the suffering of limitless sentient beings, and with wisdom completely purified of the three spheres, dedicating to enlightenment is the practice of a bodhisattva. Whatever merit we accumulate depends on others, our teachers, other sentient beings. And our practice is the best offering to our teachers. So dedicate all our virtue to enlightenment, to be able to be of perfect benefit to each and every living being without exception. And determined to follow the practices, the 37 practices of the great bodhisattvas and buddhas of the past. In order to be completely successful in each and every stage of the path to enlightenment. And remembering to dedicate with wisdom the object of the dedication. Is empty of inherent existence. The virtue of the mind of virtue, dedicating, is empty of inherent existence. And our souls, the practitioner, is empty of inherent existence. So to conclude, Jam Chu Sem Chu Rim Po She Ma Ke Panyam Ke Gu She Ke Panyam Pa Me Pa Yang Gong Ne Gong Du Pel Ba Shou.